Y'all, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Ahoy, friends. You are listening to Season 18, Episode 17, where we welcomed a new crew of underestimated podcast hosts to speak with Bob about their current season, the second season of the podcast. Heard some familiar voices and met some new friends. Speaking of friends, we are sans Zach today, but we have plenty to discuss about this episode and more. And why don't we start things off with, sounds like we have a tiny bit of housekeeping you might want to inform us about.
Tiny bit. It's the question everybody's really asking about West Memphis 3 and the DNA evidence getting tested. I don't have like super great specific answers for you, but this is what I found out over the weekend or late last week, that they're looking at probably June-ish for the evidence to finish getting tested. Wasn't real clear in that conversation why. I did see one of our listeners posted, Jason Baldwin had put a post up. And he had a little more information about it. It looked like he was sharing something that his lawyer had shared with him. I was just getting kind of the overview of what's going on. And it said that they are, because remember, they're testing, essentially, we're having them test everything. Like, we sent them everything. We're like, this is our chance. We're doing it all. And it sounded like there was, from what Jason posted, there was lots and lots of hairs that had not been tested. I only knew of a few hairs that hadn't been tested. And according to what he posted, they're just going through all these. There's a lot more things to test than they thought there was going to be to test. So it's good news. I mean, it's bad news that it's taking longer. It's good news in that the reason it's taking longer is because there's more and more materials for them to test.
Okay.
Yeah. His post said something along the lines of there's so many slides with hairs in them. So they're just testing all of them. The date I got was to expect probably June we should have the results. So I just wanted to give you guys an update on that. So we finally have heard something, because for the longest time I had no idea. You know, my contacts didn't know. Anybody was just like, I don't know. They said December or January, and now it's April, almost May, and we haven't heard anything, but did get those responses this week. So we know that things are still moving forward. Things are still looking good. We're just not ready yet because they're testing so much. So that is, and I guess this is kind of, it's sort of relevant to the episode. I mean, it's relevant to the episode, but also housekeeping-ish is underestimated. We did from the episode. In that episode, we were planning on, and I guess this just leads kind of into that discussion about my students. The plan was for Tegan, who was on the episode, and her team with the Kim Laro case to start coming out this Wednesday. We actually made a shift in that. So if you're watching this live, it's tomorrow morning. If you're listening Friday, it's already out. But episode 3 comes out this Wednesday and is actually going to be Janet's Gracie and her group and their investigation into the murder of young Brandy Peltz in Argus, who she mentioned on the podcast. They're going to come out next. And it was just one of the, what happened last week, like it was a Wednesday or Thursday when we started, I think it was Thursday. I'm just so proud of these kids and the work they do. So Tegan's group was in the final phase. Like they've done all the reviews. They're ready to go. And the last step is they give them to me and I go through and I check and let them know, is there anything you need to adjust with music or anything else we need to change along the way? Because I try to stay out of the production process as much as I can, unless they have questions for me, because I want it to be all them. when I listened to the first episode, it was you heard Tegan talking about how there was just like the case just kind of spun in all these different directions.
Sure, yeah.
And when I listened to it, I felt like I sat down and talked to the group and I was like, guys, I think this is a little disjointed. Let's go through it together. Mm. And we started going through it and I was like, I know the case, but if you're from the perspective of somebody who doesn't know anything about the case at all, it's that, you know, it's like they bring something up and I'm like, we didn't set this up. So the person doesn't know, they don't have the context. We're missing context here. And we're in, and because, you know, there's four people in the group and we started kind of talking about this and the conversation kind of went in a different direction, but that's very difficult writing a script with a team of four, you know, because, you know, they'll be like, well, you write act one, you write act two, you write act three, you know, and they're all working on different things.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, and we were going through making notes and we're like, well, this is kind of like you said this in act two, but then we say it again in act three. And it, there's like, so there was a couple little things that it was all really good information. And like the editing and the music and everything was great. And I was like, so you guys tell me what you want to do with this. And it was, for anybody that's worked with teenagers in a school, this may not seem like much. But for teenagers working in a, you know, in a school building to make this decision, I mean, it almost brought tears to my eyes.
Hmm.
They talked about it and they're like, Mr. Ruff, if Gracie's group is ready to go, and they are, they're like, we want to redo it.
Hmm.
And I'm like, okay, so we can fix that. They're like, no, like we read it and like, it's, we can do better than this.
Hmm.
We want to rewrite it and re-record it and re-edit it. And so if we have time to do that, if we can have the other two groups go, we want to start over.
Wow.
And so I was like, all right. And they've already got their first episode done. Their second episode's almost done as far as the scripts go. That, you know, and I told them too, you know, in this situation, we're coming to the end of the year. I'm like, I will help you guys. Because the problem is, so like for me, if I was like, all right, I need to re-record this and re-edit it. Like that's an afternoon for me.
Right.
Like I can knock out an edit in an afternoon, put some music on it and be done with it. For them, I mean, they had weeks into that process, you know, cause they're still learning to edit. They, you know, they've done it, but it's like, you know, that process and they're trying to get it so perfect and the music is all really new to them. And so like, it's a huge task for them to take. And they said that too. They're like, now that we've done it three times, we'll be able to do it. It won't take us so long.
Yeah.
We would rather get it right. And so I'm like, cool, you guys do that. We'll put Gracie's out. I'll help you with the edit to help speed things along. And then we're gonna bust it out. But it was, so the housekeeping bit is this week's episode is going to start Gracie's group. And their first episode is just so, Gracie's just so, I mean, her whole group is, but I mean, I've had her for 3 years.
3 years, I know.
I'm going to be so sad when she's going to graduate here in a few weeks. And it's going to be so sad to see her go. She is just so freaking talented. And I was like, this is professional level work. I mean, their episode is just so, so good. So super excited for you guys to hear that. I know that the rest of the groups are going to be just the same when they come out. But I don't know. I just thought that was, it was worth noting and having those conversations with them too, where, you know, someone felt like we failed, like we screwed up. And to make them understand, like, you don't understand like how much you didn't screw up.
Oh, absolutely.
Like most people's, when they realize there was mistakes like that, or, you know, things that maybe weren't exactly right, reaction would be good enough, especially high school kids.
Sure.
Good enough. Put
it's
it
an
out.
Assignment.
Give me my
Let's
grade.
Get it. Yeah.
Yeah. For them to be like, no, this is too important. We want to make sure that
it's
her story
so
is told properly.
That's true. That's journalism, baby. I mean, that's great.
Yeah.
You know? Knowing that you and having the conscious awareness, like you just said, that they also know, actually, we did learn. Like, we've learned from that dry, you know, run that we will be able to do this faster. And that's the, you know, effect of learning a craft and really, and that there mm-hmm. is no such thing as failure in the sense that, you know, you're always learning how to do better at it. And now they get the opportunity to put something out there that they really feel confident about. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah.
I really respect that. I'm impressed.
Me too. And it's so much of the decision was that, you know, the words I kept hearing was that, you know, like Kim deserves better than this. Like, we don't mm-hmm. want to finally be someone telling her story to a large audience and not do it right.
Yeah.
And I told him, I'm like, listen, this is like you said, it's journalism. Like, this has happened to me on many occasions. And sometimes for things I messed up, sometimes things just change. But, you know, I think I always go back to, and I told him the story about when we found out Ed was getting released. You know, that was a week. It was like a hard, you know, it was research and investigation and writing. And it was like Thursday night. And we usually, Mike and I would wrap on Friday. And we had, you know, the episode was done. We're ready to have a beer and be done. And then we get that information on Thursday. And I still remember saying, we got to throw it out.
Yeah.
We got to throw it out and start over. And it was, that was one of those cool things. Cause I still remember that day like it was yesterday. And it's like 5 PM on a Thursday and Mike going, I'm going to run home. I'm going to get something to eat. I'm coming back and we're going to knock this thing out. And he went, and then we were up until like 4 o'clock in the morning. Cause that was when we would send it to Shane to do the music. So like we had to get it written, recorded, edited, and off to Shane by 8 AM on Friday.
Yeah.
So it was, but it was, yeah. So I was like, it happens and like it's a hard decision to make.
Yeah, for mm-hmm. sure. Well, and I also, I mean, sure many people did listen to the throwback episodes. So you gave us the opportunity to revisit the first season of Underestimated Folks that you spoke mm-hmm. with and had on the podcast. So that was very fresh in my mind. I think I just listened to them back to back. Maybe I waited a day and listened to the previous one and gave myself 24 hours, but it was lovely to look back on last year's and, you know, hear from a couple of, again, familiar voices. And that the first season one was so emotional. And then this one had mm-hmm. the depth and the clear commitment to an investment in the stories and that same sort of like feeling drawn to something mm-hmm. and you see a parallel too of like some cases just sort of open up and suggest all of these other possibilities or possible other victims and things like that. And you sort of see like, oh yeah, there's some, you know, patterns to the way things can unfold. But in this episode, instead of ending with full on tears, which last year's did, we really got to hear you get roasted a little bit. And that was also very satisfying.
Yeah. I actually haven't listened to, because Erica edits it, right? And when I gave it to her, I was like, you just got to figure out what to do at the end. I'm like, people want to hear, I was like, it's not clean, but I know people want to hear like my real relationship with the kids. So I'm like, you figure it out. So I'm sure she did a fantastic job if you felt like because I did get roasted at the end of the episode.
That's so funny. I didn't know that you hadn't heard it. It's very charming. Yeah. In fact, I see folks in the chat, the live chat talking about that. Right now that wait, Lilius and Simone and yeah, Amy, everybody kind of had the same reaction I did, which was like hearing what that, getting a real sense of what that relationship is like that, you know, it's a great, I had teachers like that and those were the ones I also respected the hell out of. So it's not like I was like, I can say whatever I want to this person because who cares? Like it was definitely like, this is my boss in the sense that it's my teacher, but it's also somebody that is funny and makes me feel heard and that I can kind of, you know, rib a little bit. And that's, those were my favorite classes for sure.
Yeah. I love that class so much. It's one of those, I mean, I love teaching the other, but you know, I teach intro and advanced in that one in investigative journalism. And I just, because in the advanced class too, is we run that one kind of like a newsroom, but it does work. Like we run it like it's a business. And I'm the boss, but I'm the type of boss that will, you know, just like what we were just talking about, where it's like, okay, you need help. I'm going to come in and get my hands dirty and I'm going to help you guys get this done. We're doing the same thing right now with our documentary. We're working in advance. And I just love the maturity of those students, you know, the we know where that balance is at. And like today, because the seniors, we've got like 2.5 weeks before the seniors are gone. So that's
blink
Gracie.
Of an eye.
Yeah. And Asia, who wasn't on the podcast. Asia wasn't on the podcast. Colton, out of her group, was there because Asia was like, I got to finish writing. Like, so she's like, Colton, you go do the podcast. I got to stay in here and work.
Nice.
You know, we're going to lose though, because they're all coming up on that deadline. So yeah, but it's just, I don't have to. So I was the pregame patrons know from the pregame show that I was off work yesterday because I had an emergency with my dogs. And it's just great to have, for any of you that are teachers or been in, you know, worked in a school at all, to be able to send a message to an email to the sub that just says, I don't have any plans, and you're going through different hours, like 7th hour knows what they need to do. And then the note I get back from the sub was, you know, of course, 1st hour they were screwing around, I had to get on, and they were like, 7th hour came in, they asked where you were at, they asked if you were okay, and then they were just working. They were just working like crazy the whole hour.
Nice. Now, I think first in the episode that you did with the kids last year, we heard that you would say every day of class, what are you going to do to move your case forward today? Is that still mm-hmm. something? I don't think that particular nugget came up in this last most recent episode, but is that still true? Is that kind of your mantra for when
in the
people
in the first
in?
Semester? Yeah, this year I changed things up a little bit. So last year we really got in a bind at the end because it was like investigating, and then it was like in February or March we're like, all right, we got to put these up, because in my mind I was like, I can put an episode together in a week, and then it was like, let's start putting the episode together, and then it was like, oh shit. So this year we did things a little bit differently where we started writing in like segments. So yes, but it wasn't the same thing where every single day I came in, because I tried to break it up. I'm like, okay, you guys have an assignment. Everyone needs to file FOIA requests this week. And I taught them how to file FOIA requests, and they did it, and they got back. I'm like, all right, what are you going to do to move your case forward today? And you know, if they're busy, they're not. If not, then we started having that conversation. Like, all right, what does that look like? What can you do? Because there's a lot of frustration. For those of you that have never done any work like that, there is a lot of frustration when you're like not, because as you heard, most of the students this year had a hard time getting case files.
Yeah.
And so it's like, my job is to come in and move my case forward. I don't know what to do from here. So that's when that question really became really pertinent in those conversations this year. Cause it was like, what are you gonna do to move your case forward today? And they're like, I don't know. I don't know what to do. We've read everything we have to read. I don't know where to go from here. I'm like, okay, let's look at people then. Who have you know, who's connected to the case? Who have we reached out to? All right, can we find contact information for those folks and see if we can get a hold of them? And they'd be like, so there was a lot of me like helping walk them through what that looks like every day. But then it was also, I tried to break it up. Like after 6 weeks, I'm like, okay, this week I want you guys to have an outline done for your first episode. So you know what that, or like a series outline. What does that look like now? And then investigate for a week, and then all right, now let's look for an outline for the first episode. So we try to like split it up a little bit. So so yes, in a way, but as it was not like last year, where last year literally every single day for 5 months was, what are you doing to move your case forward? What are you doing? And then it was like, oh wait, we got to write an episode. And I learned that, you know, high schoolers that have never written a podcast episode before don't write episodes in an afternoon. Right. That's not a thing that happens.
Yeah, right. And there's four of them. And there's,
yeah.
A lot of factors there.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Well, I'm really excited about the new stuff, but if you're comfortable with it, I know that last week's follow-up, I was chomping at the bit to talk about the episodes, the actual underestimated episodes, the Jeanette journal entry episodes that Chelsea's group released. And we do have some questions and comments about those. So this is sort of a tandem, your conversation with the podcasters
and
the podcast itself. Mm-hmm. Is there a preference you have? Do you want to kind of talk about the Jeanette episodes first? And then most of the general podcaster stuff is more reactions than specific questions, but we might have a couple.
Yeah, let's do the Jeanette stuff, because I know there's questions there. And then, cool. It seems like most of it was just a lot of praise for the kids.
Okay. Well, I'll start out just by saying, and I know I was texting with you about this, how incredibly moving I found those journal entries. And I know that, you'll hear from people like Karen and some other folks from the Facebook post who also felt just very connected to Jeanette. And, they're a tough listen, even just a day to day when someone's life is going to be taken from them. Yeah. And just hearing about her kindness with, kids and animals and mom and friends, I was just kind of like crying sort of the whole time listening to these episodes, and just really feeling the loss of like what seems like a lovely human. She's a human being, of course. We all make choices. We all get stuck in places in our lives where maybe we don't always make the exact right choice, but that's what being a human being is all about. I'm curious. I know that there was a lot of thought and care that went into selecting which entries would be read and kind of how to approach that. Is that something that team struggled with it all? Was there like a was there outreach to Jeanette's family? Like, is it okay with someone if we do this? Our intention is honorable. You know, can you speak to that?
Yeah. So the team was just Chelsea.
It's just Chelsea. Of course. Yeah. 'Cause she's moving over to the other group now.
But yeah, there was a lot of, discussion with her and I, 'cause there's a few spots where it was like, where Chelsea's like, I don't know, like, this just seems too personal, and it does. And so we worked through those situations by kind of going through the same process over and over again. It's like, okay, first of all, if you're feeling like this seems like it's something that you shouldn't share, then you should listen to that feeling. Mm. And then you weigh that against, is there a purpose? And if there's a purpose, what is the purpose? And it was really interesting to go through those discussions with Chelsea. She spent a lot of time just sitting at my desk with the two of us talking through some of this stuff. And 'cause sometimes she's like, well, the only purpose is it would make for a great podcast. It makes the story more interesting if we put it out there. I'm like, okay, so you feel uncomfortable sharing it. It would make your podcast better. What is it doing for Jeanette?
Hmm.
And it was like, it's not going to do anything for Jeanette.
Hmm.
It's not like the is the public knowing this information going to help move this case forward? Or is it just because it's more interesting?
Hmm.
And if the answer was it's just because it's more interesting, then we left it out. And then there was one situation that it's more than just interesting. Like, it does bring in a bit of information as far as victimology, but it was also the people connected to it. It was too personal. It's one of those things, like, that was one of those other decisions where it's like, this is something we know they already have this and know this, but we're going to make sure that the detective working on it is focused on it. That's who needs to know this. Nobody else needs to know this.
Yeah.
Because it's not one of those things where it's like somebody's going to listen to it and be like, oh, because of this, I can help with this. That what it was, that's not a thing in this situation.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of that. Like, you heard 98% of the journal. Hmm. There was only a couple things that were left out, and one situation, I think, and only one where she mentioned that there was something that was going on, but
yeah,
that it wasn't going to get into the details of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely remember that. And of course, those of us who are interested in true crime and that sort of thing, I think probably some ears perked up. But yeah, we have a question from Christina specifically about when, I think there's a specific entry or two where we hear from Chelsea that someone's name is redacted. Christina says, whose name was redacted from the journal? The suspect, family friend not mentioned previously. I wish an expert could interpret her diary. Her diary was so different than mine, where I unloaded my soul daily when I was young.
Yeah, so some of that is stuff that was, so the entire kind of, most of the names in the journal were redacted when we got it from the FOIA request. So Chelsea had to, like, investigate and cross-reference with police reports and other things to figure out the names.
Hmm.
So because I ran this by her today, and I think she did know everyone's name. There was one name that she left out of it. Basically, I'm just trying to figure out how to phrase it, but sure. Basically, because of the discussion we just had a second ago, where it was like, no, that this person doesn't want this information to come out, and it's not helpful to the case, so we'll put the information out, but not the person who it was. It was not a suspect. Although there's the situation I'm thinking of, there's two people involved. One of them is, air quotes, a suspect, as far as the police saw them as a potential suspect or person of interest.
Mm-hmm.
The other one was not. But also, it's a person who we don't see as a legitimate suspect. So that was part of the decision too.
I mean, I really don't mean this. I hope this is taken in the way in which it's intended. But there were just times where the sadness underlying was always there, because it's heartbreaking that she was killed.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I just loved her perspective on things so much that there were also times where I get that's underneath, but I kind of forgot about that. And I was just really wanting to know how the gerbils were doing.
Right.
Like,
she you know, her sister told us so many times, like, she just loved animals so much. She's, and it was like, when you read that journal, it's like, that's with everything she had going on in her life, like that, there's so much that she was like always thinking about those critters that she was, that she was taking care of. And it's like you said, the whole thing is, it's, and Chelsea said the same thing, that, you know, when she got the journal in the FOIA request, she read it and she's like, but like really reading it and like speaking the words and going through it, she's like, it just, it really like, I don't want to say woke her up, but it was like, it just made me feel so much like understand Jeanette so much more and just have so much more, you know, sadness around the situation. Cause it's like, you just see what, like what she's thinking, like her words, what was she writing down? What was she saying? And it's everything from, you know, there's things that obviously when she made the entry that she was, you know, got the job at Gamble's and she was so excited she got the job at Gamble's. And it's like, I don't know, it's just, it's such a weird thing to like listen to. And I know it was for Chelsea to even be speaking. It was like, we know it's like, oh, that's the, if that had, it's like, that's the thing. If that hadn't happened, maybe actually, I mean,
well, we don't know.
It may
sure.
have happened somewhere else, but it was like, obviously that's where she was killed. And then like the conflict she was having with her boss and her last entry, just is just the things she was going through at the place where she ended up being murdered. It's just, I don't know. There's something just very, very raw and real about it.
I totally agree. Yeah, Shelley said, now I'm blending the different styles of responses we got, but Shelley says, no questions. Just wanted to say how much Chelsea has learned and grown. Just listening to season one and starting season two, you can hear the confidence in her voice. The rest sound very dedicated, and I can't wait to hear what they put together. And that's, you know,
I read that to Chelsea today. I let her see that.
Good.
And she was really flattered by that and said, thank you.
Good. Yeah, because was it Tegan? I'm conflating, I think, a little, because I did listen to both of the underestimated discussions that you had with kids. But we hear in both episodes, I believe, this feeling of just really being called to a certain story and a certain.
Tegan very much was in the Kim Larrow case, you know, and she all the way from the beginning of the year when she, because, you know, the way the process works, you know, I give them the assignment, find something, find a situation, something that you are invested in that you want to spend a year working on and try to, you know, make a positive difference in. And then, you know, everybody comes up with stuff that, you know, they spend a few days, like a week searching and researching, and then they pitch to the class. And then we kind of narrow those down, and then people kind of, you know, decide, do you want to stick with your thing or do you like the, and then the groups kind of form themselves. You know, there's like, in Tegan's case, when she pitched Kim's, you know, she was kind of emotional about it and was, you know, I just really feel a connection, just whether it's, you know, the similar life experiences, decades apart or whatever it was. But yeah, her pitch was so moving that, you know, three other students that had found other cases that they wanted to cover, when they heard her and how passionate she was about it, said they dropped theirs, that we want to work with Tegan and we want to do this.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah, I see Simone in the chat says that she's feeling that frustration of what you guys talked about with, and that's came up in the first season too, of this being a case that other people have strong feelings about and other people have their sort of quote unquote favorite suspects, and that there can be, you know, you see even a high school student making a podcast feels that same kind of proprietary thing that we hear about between law enforcement agencies and you know, journalists, and that thing that happens where even the best of us, I think, sometimes can get caught up in the, you know, ultimately, of course, yes, what my truest heart wants is for this case to move forward and for the truth to come out and for someone like Jeanette to receive some sort of justice, however that looks. And then there's the kind of super ego or the ego part that's like, but I want it to be my story, and I don't want this kid to come in and, you know,
and unfortunately
sweep it out from under me. And
I don't know, but I feel like that's kind of what happened to Chelsea.
Yeah,
there's three other people that were very interested in the case. Two of them are content creators, you know, that are all local and have all done work on the case. And we're all super excited. We were giving it the exposure. And then it was like that when their podcast became so popular and was getting so much attention and getting the state police connected to it. And then their ultimate, you know, hypothesis they came up with was not matching theirs. when my students' hypothesis was not matching these other people's, it was like, I don't know, things got weird. The thing that I found the weirdest was Jeanette's sister was so invested and so thankful that that the kids were doing this, and was like begging them to pick it up again this year. And then like, she just didn't like Chelsea just could not get a response from her. And even Stephanie, who graduated last year, like reached out to her and was like, cause she was like the main point of contact last year, and was like, I don't know what is going on, but like nobody. And I know that I found out later there's some other kind of projects in the mix. And I'm like, so yeah, I don't know for sure, but it sure seems like there's other people that are like, oh, now that people are talking about this, now we're gonna, you know, make a production about it or something. And it's unfortunate. But I mean, Chelsea, I mean, so you talk about hard conversations, you know, there was conversations with Chelsea where, you know, we had all these ideas of where she was going to go with it. And then, you know, because we knew very clearly the direction we were going. And then we hit those roadblocks. And then the people connected to it, for those that listened to last season, you know, they kind of landed on a profile, which Jim Clementi helped with, and had, you know, the person who was an important person of interest in their mind, that was kind of going to be the focus. And Chelsea was trying to, you know, anybody who was connected with her wanted to know more, but see if we can answer some questions about the profile. And it was like, it's been so long, everybody was either dead or, you know, only knew her vaguely. Didn't, you know, she did get to speak to several people, but, you know, she had those conversations where she's like, I don't know what to, like, what do I do? And then ultimately that's when she landed on the idea. She's like, well, I think she deserves for her words to be heard and people to get to know her, if nothing else, you know, because the assignment is do something positive, move this forward. And so that, you know, she had that conversation, you know, and Chelsea's only a junior, you know, so the maturity level there is really impressive that she's like, I feel like I can do something positive for Jeanette by letting the world know more about who she was as a person, because no one's seen this before. Mm-hmm. And so that's why she decided to do the diary.
Hey everybody, Bob here. I'm interrupting this ad break to tell you how you can never have to hear another ad and take a huge step towards helping us continue our work all at the same time. As most of you know, I provide all investigative and advocacy services to the people and attorneys that we cover on the show completely free. Over the years, we provided hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of professional investigations to the wrongfully convicted, completely free of charge. And the reason that we're able to do that is in large part thanks to the support of listeners like you. Our Patreon community funds the overwhelming majority of our work, and I want to take this opportunity to ask and encourage you to join the club. The base level membership is just $5 a month. Now, while that's only a cup of coffee's worth out of your account, it makes all the difference in the world to us and the people that we work with. And for your $5 a month, you get a whole list of extra content, exclusive just for patrons. Every week, Janet, Zach, and I do an hour-long live stream just for our patrons. You also get an unedited video version of the Friday follow-up every week, a weekly pregame podcast that drops into your podcast feed. Patrons often get to participate in interviews that we do on the show live days or weeks before the rest of the audience gets to hear them. And of course, the best part, all of our content is completely ad-free for our patrons at the $5 a month level. Patreon really is the only way that we're able to keep doing this work. And it would mean the absolute world to me, Zach, Janet, and Erica if you'd consider joining, if you're able to do so. Joining the Patreon community is super easy. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. Or you can go right to the episode description of this or any episode and just click the link. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for your support. And now I'll return you to your regularly scheduled ads.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Karen says, I'm invested. I need more on Jeanette. Well, Karen, you heard why that might not be possible for this particular iteration. She says she sounds so young and innocent in her journal entries. This was a time frame I was in high school, and I sure didn't document loads of laundry and detailed menus in my journal. It's almost like she was trying to keep it light and surface level. How did no one in the store hear her when she was killed? I assume there had to be customers or other employees there. Obviously, a lot going on in that post, Karen. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I'll certainly will defer to you, Bob, but journal keeping is so fascinating because, you know, here, like to use an example with Hay, you know, Hay's journal, one of the things that came into play as there was this discussion with the filmmakers and with Undisclosed and stuff about reading her journal was like her journal sort of says, if I'm remembering correctly at the beginning of it, like, this is a journal for so people will know kind of who I was and what my life was like, that there was almost this sense of someday this will be found and it will be read.
Yeah.
And then other people, you know, put all of their deepest, darkest feelings in it. And no, I'm never going to, you know, this, I wouldn't want this to exist past my passing and all of that. And it's just, and then other, you know, there are certain, like I come from, half of my family comes from a religious background where journaling is very important. And it really is meant to be the sort of timekeeping of like, what did you make for dinner that day? Like, who did you talk to?
Mm-hmm.
What's your family situation like? How was work? And that you do kind of keep it in that space. So it can really be anything to so many, you know, to anyone. Do you have additional thoughts on that? And then we can talk about kind of the question mark around
I don't
her
really
death.
Know because I've never done a journal, you know, so like I don't know. I've always, if you're a person like me who's just never had the, weirdly, like I've talked about like wanting to write like a memoir, but like it's because for me, like that's like there, you know, there's things that I want the public to hear. The idea of writing stuff, I see the value in it, but it's hard for me to wrap my brain around like when I would sit down to write Dear Diary, whatever I'm going to write that day. It's just the way my brain works. I'm like, what is this for? If it's just for me, I already know this, but it's private, so no one else is supposed to read it. But it's kind of written for if somebody else reads it. It's just, I think I have too, I'm too left-brained in that sense where like it's hard for me to wrap my brain around.
Yeah.
Not, but, and again, that's not to like disparage anybody else. I think it's amazing and I know it's just for me, it's hard for me to wrap my brain around it.
Yeah. I think for a lot of people, especially at a younger age, the experience can really be like coming to understand your feelings differently and better when you write them down, like really writing something down and then almost like having a conversation with yourself, right? You're not having a conversation with your therapist or your mom or your best friend. You're having a conversation with yourself. And as you reflect and look at what all spilled out, that elucidates something for you where you're able to go, oh, wow, I feel better now that I've written this. And now that I'm kind of reading it, I almost wonder if maybe I'm actually mad at da-da-da or like I'm mad at myself or blah, blah, blah. Like to get that kind of clarity, I think that can be very helpful for people. As far as the question around how did no one in the store hear her, customers, employees, would you refer people back to the first season of Jeanette?
Yeah,
the Jeanette
you should
coverage?
Definitely listen to the first season, but it's not that the question is answered. I mean, we went there, you know, I've been there a couple of times, took the students there, the whole group went, and we went into that basement and we sent people upstairs and made some noise and you can hear up there that there's a lot going on. I also think that that's part of why our theory is that we think it was someone she knew. We think that there was probably a very private conversation that caused them to step into that back room to have it. And I think that there was a blitz attack and she was ambushed. I don't think you see the violence in that attack and you're thinking about screaming and yelling and all that. But I actually don't. I think she was probably knocked unconscious almost immediately. So there wouldn't have been screaming, and a lot of the injuries were done not post mortem but post consciousness for sure. So I think that explains some of it. But yeah, it's really peculiar. It's the choices that were made by the offender to do it, when they did it, where they did it, I think speaks a lot. That's part of why that, you know, where the kids came up with their theory, because it does. It's like, you know, Jim Clemente always says, it's like shining those decisions are like putting a mirror up against the offender. Like, why would they make this choice? This was a conscious decision to do this at this place. You know, as Jim always says, you know, a particular person was chosen at a particular time, at a particular place for a particular reason. And when you start to add all that up, it doesn't equal, it certainly doesn't seem to equal random. It doesn't seem to equal crime of opportunity, because it was a terrible opportunity. Mm-hmm. It seems to indicate some kind of planning. And then he started asking why would the plan be there? Surely they could get her alone somewhere else. You know, there was all these different things. And it was like, well, because of the kids' schedule, when she would get the kids, and who would be home, when she, like, that was the place where she would be alone, and they had to take a massive risk to do it. And that's a lot of why they ended up where they ended up. But as far as like any more, you know, as far as on underestimated, it's not being covered anymore. I still don't know. Because Chelsea asked me today, she's like, are you going to do anything else with that?
Yeah. Haley asked, what's your personal theory on Jeanette? So I think people are still really keyed up on
I think that the profile that the students came up with last year has serious legs to it. That saying, with the caveat that, you know, a profile is not evidence and is not an end all be all. It's not like the profile equals this person did it. But I think that it makes a lot of sense. I think it's unfortunate that the relationship broke down with Jeanette's sister. It just kind of
went quiet.
Shut down. And also her sister had some other things going on too that could have to do with it. But I would love that case still nags at me. I would love to be able to do more with it. So I can't say that it's the end of it. I don't know if it'll ever be anything that'll be on a podcast again, but there's definitely more that I would like to see done with the case.
Yeah.
That I would like to personally do with the case.
Yeah. Jennifer says, just a comment. I'm so impressed with how well-spoken and comfortable the kids are being recorded. I speak publicly for work quite a bit, and so many adults struggle with this. No matter what they do in their life, this is something that will serve them very well forever. Well done, Bob and students. And selfishly, I love this podcast so much and wish y'all could produce episodes year-round.
Yeah, well, there'll be more next year.
As the kids are like, no, yeah, it's so a lot of work.
And look, there's a lot of, you know, the kids are learning and I'm learning, you know, so we made adjustments this year, and we're kind of at the point now where we're starting to like have those discussions like, okay, what could we do better next year? Cause I'm in the same boat. Like it's not just they need to learn better how to put it together, investigate, produce the episodes, but I need to learn how to do better, how to guide them and teach them along that path. So, you know, we're looking at potentially next year having the entire class work on a single case. And I think I've already mentioned this publicly, but both Chelsea and Tegan and McKenna, who you haven't heard from yet, but all three of them are part of our local Potawatomi Nation tribe here. And they all express interest in coming back next year and doing a missing and murdered Indigenous persons case. And the rest of the class, the ones that are going to be returning next year, we're all really invested in that idea too. So we're going to see what that looks like. So next year, it may be, you know, maybe longer form, and maybe everybody focus. And that's another thing for me as a teacher. I got to figure out, you know, does that end up with people that are just kind of sitting there not doing much, other people working, or is it like getting everybody focused on the same thing? Mm-hmm. Is that going to be more effective? So we'll see. We'll be talking about it. If you make it to our advisory board meeting, Jana, we'll be talking about some of that.
It's on my calendar. It's on my calendar. Excellent. Laura says, super impressive students. Do they still need donations for their work? If so, how can we donate? Yeah, I remember in the first season, we talked a lot about they were going out and mm-hmm. trying to get some, you know, local advertising and stuff like that. Tell us if there's anything that people can help with.
For sure. Absolutely. And they did that again this year. Budgets are always tight with school. So, you know, our program has been lucky in like equipment and travel and stuff that we need. We've been able to do more than we would if we just were working on a normal budget, because the kids bring in revenue through local advertising and through some advertising through Audio Boom where we put the podcast out. But absolutely, if you're interested in making a donation like that, if you just shoot me an email through theories@truthandjusticepod.com or just click the contact form on the website or even on socials, if you really would like to do that, I can give you the information. You just have to like mail a paper check into the school. But those are earmarked specific. My students have, it's called a student activity account. So they have an account that is, if it is sent in for investigative journalism, it goes into their budget that only they can use it for things for their class. So it's not like it like goes in and goes into a general fund somewhere and it disappears. So it does get used by them. And that may come up next year because that's one of the things we talked about with the potential of an MMIP case next year is, you know, that we've been looking at some that are not local to us. And we're looking at like, can we like arrange, you know, air quotes, field trips and be able to travel with the whole group to go do some of this work, to get boots on the ground and check out some of these places. And of course, that's going to take a lot of money to be able to do that with, you know, a dozen kids. So absolutely, if you're interested and willing, get in touch with me and we'll set you up to show you how to do it.
Very cool. I think that's all I have for this super great episode with the students, and I'm very excited to hear more Underestimated coming out. Can't wait.
Me too. Super excited about it. And guys, make sure that you tune in this week. And again, on Wednesday this week, Gracie's group is coming out with the Brandy Pelts. And again, you're going to be blown away by the episode, but just the writing and production of the episode. They just did such an amazing job. So that's coming out this week. And we were just discussing today.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, what's happening Sunday? What are we hearing?
This Sunday. Oh, yeah. For us, we are going to hear, I'm trying to remember the name. I got so many things floating around. So on our show for this week, we're going to hear from a guy named Dwayne Betts. A listener recommended him. He was formerly incarcerated. And as part of his incarceration, he was not allowed to have any books. And I'm going to let him explain it I'm interviewing him tomorrow. So I haven't talked to him yet. I just read a lot about him. But he really feels like that, you know, that books and poetry and things like that being available to prisoners is very therapeutic, and it's something they need to have. So he has created a nonprofit called Freedom Reads. So he's going to be coming on talking about his story, about his organization and what they do for people that are incarcerated to make sure that they have books to read. So that's coming up on Sunday. His story's crazy fascinating. So that should be a really interesting conversation. And for our Throwback Thursday this week, I decided to bring up an old episode with Miss Laura Nyreiter, who I had on several years ago. And I was like listening back to some old episodes. I'm like, oh, this was such a great episode. I love Laura so much. So your Throwback Thursday episode is going to be Laura. Again, Underestimated, the Brandy Pelts case starts Wednesday. And the discussion we were having was, where's everybody at with the rewrites happening with the Kim Larrow case?
Oh, yeah.
Because everybody's chomping at the bit to hear him. Everybody's chomping at the bit to get their episodes out, that we may, at least for a bit, speed up releasing to, instead of just every Wednesday, doing like a Wednesday and a Friday release. So you may get Wednesday episode 1 of Brandy Pelts and Friday episode 2 of Brandy Pelts.
Woo!
That's the tentative plan right now, because I know we've got Colton's group. They said all three of theirs are ready to go. We got to do our final review. So that's kind of if those three are ready to go, then we're going to go ahead and speed things up a little bit and get these episodes out.
Great. Well, stay glued to the feed. I can't wait.
Yeah, lots going on, lots to listen to. Thanks, everybody, for joining us, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production. Co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X at Truth Justice Pod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney. And Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.